You are tuned in to the latest episode of Fish Bites. My name is Danny Martinez. Yes, I am back. I'm back from my honeymoon, which of course we scheduled in what would be a franchise-altering week for the Miami Marlins. Thank you to Eli for coming in and filling in amazingly the way that you always do, and for Wells for coming on. I loved the interview. I need to have Wells back on at some point when I'm hosting, because he's just one of my favorite individuals to talk sports with and follow on Twitter. I said that it's a franchise-altering week because, in my opinion, it is. We're going to have 45 minutes to an hour conversation today where it's just me. It's just my voice. I am back. Maybe I missed the microphone. Maybe it's just because there's so much content, but there's no interview today. It's just myself and you, wherever you're listening, because we need to devote the time for what happened this week. I get it. I'm a positive guy. So today might be a little different for you. It's not all perfect in my eyes. When I say franchise altering, I'm not going to sell you solely on the positive here. It could. This could be a franchise altering week in a very radically positive fashion. But it could be a franchise altering week in a negative fashion as well. We're going to talk about the deals that were made, why I have some cognitive dissonance over it, what we can expect from some of the players. We just recorded and released on Earning Their Stripes, a breakdown of these trades. And if you want to have three opinions instead of just one, I advise you to go listen to the latest Earning Their Stripes podcast. But I know that there are some listeners that necessarily don't love listening to minor league prospect talk, right? That's not their cup of tea. That's not their cup of coffee, and I don't blame them. So they listen here for the major league content. The reason that I'm going to be able to discuss that is because, well, it was the major league trade deadline, and the deals did come from a major league rebuilding fashion. So we're going to discuss it. But please go ahead and also listen to ETS, the latest episode there. You're going to want to hear what myself, Ian, and Ethan thought of these deals. We're also going to pick up a conversation. If you remember, maybe five, six episodes ago, we spoke about a poll that I sent out to the fan base on whether they felt that the rebuild was ahead of schedule or behind schedule or on pace. It's a really good time to update that. So I sent another poll, and that's going to be the second conversation piece that we have today after we talk about the deals that were made, of course. Then we're going to wrap it up with pitching performances of the week and your hitters of the week. But like I said, 45 minutes to 60 minutes of meaty conversation, because it's needed. It's needed. This was one of the more aggressive, surprising, creative, risky deadlines that I can remember the Miami Marlins conducting. And maybe there was something to the extent of the waiver trades no longer being able to be done. Matter of fact, I'll say this. If we were still operating under those rules, for those that don't know before, the deadline wasn't really just July 31st. You could conduct trades via waivers after July 31st. That's no longer in the ballgame. So you can't do that. If you could do that, I think that there was a possibility that maybe we could have worked out something for a Neil Walker, a Starlin Castro, something to that extent. But that's out of the window. It's out of the scope of baseball anymore. And what we saw were teams, especially in that Tampa Bay Rays deal, teams get to the deadline and pull the trigger on something that they might have not done years prior. And maybe that's why the Marlins were as creative as they've ever been in this organizational history. Maybe it's just the fact that this new regime, this new front office is creative. I don't know. But make no mistake, with that creativity came risk. So let's get right into the deals. The first one, and we started off with this on Earning Their Stripes as well, because it is the one that if you are listening to, you probably want to talk about. So I'm going to give it to you. I don't need teases. I'm going to give it to you, and then hopefully you stick along for the rest of the conversation piece as well, because there's a lot of content there. Jazz Chisholm for Zach Gallen. I gave this story on Earning Their Stripes, and I'm going to give it to you for those that don't listen to that sister podcast. As soon as I got off the boat, I got Wi-Fi in Aruba. I saw the tweet go through. I don't know if it was John Heyman, someone that the Miami Marlins had acquired Chaz Chisholm. And the first reaction was me quote tweeting that information with OMGGGGG because I could not believe that this caliber of prospect had been sent over and was now in the Miami Marlins organization. I felt that there was nothing that we had to offer, aside from possibly Caleb Smith, that could have returned that caliber of elite prospect. I was wrong, apparently, because then the next tweet that I see when I refresh the feed is outgoing Zach Gallen to Arizona. And I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, I froze. In Aruba, nice and warm, maybe with some drink in my hand, I froze. Because as creative as that is, the first initial reaction is that that's a gut punch. It's a gut punch because when, you know, many individuals, maybe even some that were listening now, were saying, oh, Zach Gallen, look at this trade for Ozuna. We didn't get anything. We didn't get anything. Gallen's just a throw in. He's never going to amount to anything. Some of us, including yours truly, were on Twitter or at the local restaurant or just in conversation with peers saying, listen, the tools are there. He's going to be good. Just wait. And those, some of us, were validated this year. We're validated the way that he performed in AAA. We're validated the way that he comes up at the major league level. Because now we're talking about, make no mistake, Jazz Chisholm is the better prospect. Jazz Chisholm has a much, much higher ceiling of what he can be. But Zach Gallen has done it at the major league level. Zach Gallen came and he created fans out of all of those out there that said, oh, the Marlins trade with Ozuna, that was just another slap in the face. They didn't get anything in those trades. They validated those of us listening and myself that said, listen, Zach Gallen is going to be something special. So to see Gallen leave was a punch in the face. I think Ethan said that on the other recording, and I agree with him. Twitter also agreed. Twitter agreed to the chorus of hundreds of Marlins fans, very rational Marlins fans, having a nervous breakdown that Zach Gallen was included in this trade. All of a sudden, me freezing, my initial gut reaction of me freezing turned into, okay, but hold on, give it a second. You understand who Jazz Chisholm is. Because all of a sudden, this reaction, which I believe was authentic, and I believe it has a place, the reaction of what in the world did they just do? I believe is valid. I'm not here to tell you that you can't have that reaction. I'm just here to say that the reaction of entirely ignoring what Jazz Chisholm is and the rationale behind that trade is also unjust. You know, we see it in the world all the time that the pendulum swings one way too far or we overcorrect when something is wrong. I think an overcorrection happened here where we were so surprised with who Gallen was, some of you, and we were so proud of what had he become that all of a sudden, a top elite prospect in a position of need, because Miguel Rojas is our captain. He is a two-win player right now. He is very good at shortstop, but he's not our long-term solution. He is a little older. He's a free agent after 2020. He's likely not here unless they extend him in a utility role, if anything, the next time that the Marlins are a playoff team. Who the prospect is ranked 31st on Fangraphs, is ranked 59th on Pipeline, and unranked on Baseball America, which is my go-to, and we're going to have a conversation about why there's such differentiation there between the three sites. But who has been an elite prospect and has performed well. Oh, and by the way, he led the minor leagues shortstops in home runs last year, and he's doing it again this year. Someone who could be a gold glove defender at short. 10 out of 10 times, you would have chosen him over Zach Gallen 3 or 6 months ago. Even with the way that Zach Gallen performed at AAA, which is impressive when you consider the league he was doing it in, a very pro-hitter league, you would have still taken the cornerstone superstar prospect at short over a pitcher who's very good and has a very high floor, meaning, you know, at worst, Zach Gallen's going to be a very good back-end starter in a rotation. But Zach Gallen's not someone who is likely going to be an ace. Zach Gallen is not Jose Fernandez. Zach Gallen should not be considered untouchable for an elite prospect in a position of need. Jazz Chisholm is now a member of the Miami Marlins organization. And whether you feel better than I do about that trade, I'm at best 50-50. I still feel that gut punch to the face of when I first saw that it was Gallen that was going out. Even if you're better than me, even if you're better than the 50-50, there's absolute risk, but do not let anybody temper your excitement about this young man. He is 21 and he's already at AA. Now, we saw his first game, right? We saw the home run and the double and the triple and the 3-for-4. We continue to see the elite defense at shortstop. We see the fact that he has plus power for that position. He has plus fielding for that position. He is fast. He is basically the prototypical shortstop for modern era baseball. He can lead off, but he's going to give you 20 homers. He's going to give you a really good solid glove at short, and he's going to give you solid base running. If he becomes his ceiling, and listen to me, I'm really not trying to sell you here on Jazz. I'm telling you what I truly believe, the same way that I told many people what I truly believed about Zach Gallen, and they didn't believe me. If he reaches his ceiling, he is a superstar at the major league level. I'm not the only person to say that. Go look at Fangraphs. Go look at Baseball America. A superstar. Not just a star, not just a little above average. A superstar. But let's talk about why Baseball America has him unranked. Because see, the big thing in the little monologue I just gave you is if he reaches his ceiling, we're going to look back at this trade and we're going to laugh at those that felt that you couldn't trade a Zach Gallen for a Jazz Chisholm. But never, and I really mean this, almost never, have I seen Fangraphs and Baseball America, the two sites that I go to, right? I'm on air with this. I can't go back now, and I truly believe it. There are big three: Baseball America, Fangraphs, and Pipeline. Not the biggest fan of Pipeline, sue me. But I am a big fan of Baseball America and Fangraphs. Baseball America is a little bit more on the field scouting, old school, traditional scouting. Fangraphs is a lot more analytic driven. They hardly ever disagree on a prospect the way they do about Chaz. Now, the reason that they hardly ever disagree is because they're good at what they do. And you could be very analytically driven or traditionally driven and still be able to measure a prospect and a player well. And yet something here has Fangraphs at 31. I need you to understand that. The analytically driven, one of the gold standards alongside Baseball America scouting sites, has Jazz Chisholm as number 31 in all of baseball. They didn't have even Zach Gallen, I believe, up there. And if he did, it was bottom portion. And yet the other gold standard, more traditionally driven on field, which I love, Baseball America has him unranked. Now, to be fair, he was ranked, I believe, in the 50s or 60s. And then he had a year so far this year where he was only hitting 204. His OPS, OPS actually was still pretty solid, but he was striking out a lot. I'm okay with him being unranked. I'm not here to say that Baseball America lost its edge here. I'm not here to say that. I have a solid understanding of why they would do that. When you are striking out at the level that Jazz Chisholm was, it's hard to say you're going to be a consensus top 100. And yet Fangraphs has him at 31 and Pipeline has it at 59. But then what is it about Jazz that excites you, and what is it that worries you? I already hinted at, you know, the K recognition, the heavy swing. He's a pop first kind of a guy. He's going to swing for the fences, which is going to yield a high strikeout rate. But even in his lowest year, right? Oh, he's hitting 204 this year. His weighted ones created plus is still above average. If you want to look at value, where we can't really do wins above replacement in the minor league system. If you want to look at value for a player offensively, I've told you I like OPS, I like the slash, and I like rated runs created. Plus, average is 100. In 2018, in single A, 119. In high A, 156. And this year, in double A, where he was supposed to be struggling, 114, meaning that he is still a better than league average hitter for where he was at. We can't really talk about what he's done with the Marlins because it's only been a few games. And if I tell you that he has a weighted runs created plus of 701, you would understand how that's all about small sample and not actually anything he can sustain. But of course, it's about strikeouts. It's about power. It's about speed. It's about gold glove. I understand the concerns. I understand the risk here, which is what I have said this entire time. Make no mistake, there is great risk letting Zach Gallen out of this organization. I don't understand, however, those that pretend that letting Zach Gallen out of this organization suddenly makes their pitching a weakness. Baloney. Not even close. Zach Gallen was not the linchpin of Miami having a top pitching organization, okay? We didn't just trade away Edward Cabrera or Braxton Garrett or Trevor Rogers or Sixto Sanchez. We didn't trade away any of those potential ace pitchers. Zach Gallen is going to be good. I think Zach Gallen will push that ceiling that many have him as a number four, number three. I think he will. I think he could be a number two in a competitive rotation. But in Jazz Chisholm, you just received a prospect who is highly touted with top 50 pedigree, with plus power, plus glove at shortstop, plus speed, plus base running. If he gets his K percentage even around 25 or even around 30, you are talking about a superstar, 30 home run, 30 stolen bases at shortstop for a throw-in player, quote unquote, which has surpassed his expected ceiling. That's called maximizing value. That's something that, although very, very, very risky, and that's where the dissonance comes in. Dissonance is when you have two things that make sense in front of you and you can't choose between them because one works against the other. I love having Jazz Chisholm in the system. I hate having to let go of Zach Gallen. There is risk. It is 50-50. But by God, you might have just found the future superstar shortstop for the Miami Marlins for the next 10 years. Let's see what he can do. I use the phrase maximizing value in taking someone who is a third piece in a trade, developing him up to be someone who can yield you a superstar prospect, potential, and bringing him back. Well, if you want to talk about value, that's exactly what the Marlins did. Because if you recall, these are the trade. I'm not sure how many people were keeping tabs with it right at 4 o'clock. But the trade came in right around 4, even a little bit right after, where the Tampa Bay Rays acquired Trevor Richards and Nick Anderson, two very good arms. I can imagine that they're going to be very creative with what they do with Richards in that changeup. Maybe use him as an opener or as a bulk guy out of their pen. And Nick Anderson has one of the liveliest fastballs and movements in all of baseball. But these are two players that the Marlins acquired for almost nothing. The Marlins found Trevor Richards in Indy ball, and Nick Anderson was acquired in this offseason for a middling prospect who, you know, I'm not going to place limits on anyone's career, but has a long shot of contributing at the major league level. They developed them. They flipped them for an elite prospect and a former high round pick in Ryan Stanek, who will eventually likely be the closer for the Marlins and is not a free agent until 2024. He's not the elite prospect. Jesús Sánchez is. Does that sound familiar? Maximizing value, getting creative in a trade, and getting back elite prospects. Jesús Sánchez Oh, Jesús Sánchez is ridiculous. Jesús Sánchez is 21 years of age, and he is in AAA. He also has multiple home runs since he came over. Chisholm hit a home run. Sánchez has hit two home runs, if not even three, since he came over. He has 60 grade hit tool. He reminds a lot of individuals, just solely in his hit tool, of Christian Yelich. I said that on ETS, and I clarified, and I will clarify with you. I do not mean MVP Christian Yelich. I mean Christian Yelich 2011, right before he was considering, not him, but the Marlins were considering bringing him up. He reminds a lot of individuals and a lot of scouts of that Christian Yelich profile of hitter. Plus hitting tool, plus power. He's adequate in the fielding, adequate with running. He's someone that if you really needed to, could put him at center for a pinch. Likely not. He'll likely be left field, right field. But he does not have an average tool in the bucket is what I'm trying to tell you. His arm is above average. His running is average to above average. Pipeline actually has him as 55 with run. Base running has always been good. Fielding is 55. Power is above average. Hitting is almost at elite level. He's a consensus top 50 prospect in baseball. Fangraphs has him at 35. Baseball America has him at 48. Pipeline has him at 42. Now, do you see how close those numbers are? The numbers are close because he is a much safer prospect than Jazz Chisholm. The volatility, the variability, and the numbers for Jazz Chisholm is incredibly indicative of the player that he is, which is why the if is a big thing with Jazz. If he hits that ceiling, you have a superstar shortstop. But he might not even sniff that ceiling if he doesn't get those strikeouts under control. That's not the case with Jesús Sánchez. With Jesús Sánchez, the reason that everyone has him from highest is 35 to lowest pedigree is 48 is because he's good. When I was writing about the potential candidates for JT Realmuto trade, Jesús Sánchez was one of the individuals I wrote about, and I said that it was never going to happen, that it would be lovely for them to consider Jesús Sánchez coming over, but just like Franco and some of the other, Senzel, some of the other great prospects that we were talking about, Senzel in the Red system, it was never going to happen. This is a future superstar that you have just added to your system. For Trevor Richards, who is 2 years removed from indie ball and you were able to develop in your system, and Nick Anderson that you acquired for a middling prospect this last offseason. It is incredible. It is theft that the Marlins were able to pull that off. It's just incredible. Jesús Sánchez is going to be a star in Miami. There are some prospects who you cannot say that about, and then there are some that are safer. He is one of the ones that are, without any doubt, in my mind, safer. If you want, you could even go ahead and log him right now. 2021, middle of the lineup kind of bat, because that is exactly what he is going to be. Now, I spoke to you a little bit about the fact that volatility balances out with safe. If there was one thing I would have done differently in this rebuild is not have gone after so many volatile players, right? The Lewis Brinsons, the Monty Harrison. I love Monty, but there is some volatility to his game. The Marlins balanced themselves out with this trade. If you were fearful of what could happen with Jazz Chisholm and with the Zach Gallen exchange, you quickly sat yourself back and said, well, I'm not fearful at all about this one. You created value and you turned it into incredible, incredibly safe and elite prospect in Jesús Sánchez. But what would you tell me and what would you call me if I told you that wasn't even my favorite trade of the week? Because it really wasn't. It's the safest trade. It's the most exciting trade, but it's not my favorite trade of the week. My favorite trade of the week was the first one that was done, which for what it's worth, also sent shockwaves through the fan base. Because what they did was, again, maximize value and go get a big bat. Sergio Romo was always going to be flipped. We know this. we thank him for him being here, the amazing leader he is. I so hope that he considers coming back in free agency for this upcoming season. And we thank him for it by allowing him to go pursue a playoff race with Minnesota. But that's not the creative part. For as great as Romo is, and he is, he was never going to yield a top prospect. I would have been surprised if he even was able to yield more than $250K of international money. So what did the Marlins do? Well, the Marlins took Chris Vallabont. They added him to the package, and in doing so, was able to bring back another lefty bat. By the way, all three of the prospects acquired were lefty. The Marlins now have an absolutely stacked left-handed prospect base in the farm system. Eason Diaz, J.J. Blade, Lewin Diaz, who we're speaking about at the moment, Jesus Sanchez, Jazz Chisholm, and on and on. You have switch hitters in Nassim Nunez. I mean, incredibly impressive left-handed pop, which for what it's worth, IQ points for the Marlins. Do you know why they're chasing left-handed bats? Number one, they're very valuable. But number two, their park yields better to left-handed power bats than it does righties. Righties get destroyed at Marlins Park because they pull or they go pull center and they have a 400-foot flyout. Lefties, not so much. With lefties, you pull a ball, you're likely going to get it out of the park. So 2021, when you have a lineup of four, and again, I'm not saying all four of these guys are going to reach their ceilings. If they do, just book the championship rings right now. But if two of them reach their ceiling, if one fails entirely and one reaches his floor and he's an average guy, you have an incredibly impressive lineup from 2021 moving forward with the lefty power that they've brought in. But nonetheless, I digress. I was mentioning how they packaged Sergio Romo and Chris Vallabont. Chris Vallabont was drafted last year. Okay, he's been in the system for a year. They have upped his value. He wasn't a top round draft pick. And they packaged him for Lewin Diaz. Lewin Diaz is someone that I have been targeting as a fan, of course. I have been targeting since the beginning of this rebuild. You know, we all love receipts. My receipts are on Twitter. From November of 2018 and even earlier, I was saying that someone I would want the Marlins to target to fulfill that first base void, whether Gary Cooper was there or not, is Lewin Diaz of the Minnesota Twins. He was in a system that had other prospects that could fill that first base void for the Twins and was someone that I identified last year as someone who was underperforming. And he was. He was underperforming to an extent that he wasn't even protected in the Rule 5 draft. He went undrafted in the Rule 5 draft. Basically, no one was taking a chance on Lewin or Lewin Diaz. He is a power-hitting lefty. He has an excellent glove at first base. He's one of the best fielding first basemen in all of minor league baseball. He's never going to run, okay? He's never going to be a speedster. But overall, he has four very solid tools. Average hitter, average contact, well above average power, well above average defense. But for whatever reason, 2018 was just off the tracks bad for Lewin Diaz. I mean, off the tracks awful for Lewin Diaz. He went from being a top 10 first base prospect in baseball across the different sites to hardly being mentioned after this year. And you know what? I can't blame them. I identified him as someone who's a bounce back candidate. I have it written out on Twitter if you want to find it and you want to just make sure that I'm not bluffing you here. But I can't blame anyone for that. He went from someone that had, again, weighted runs created plus of 123, well above average in 2015, 149 in the great to elite level in 2016, 114 again above average in 2017, 268. Now, he had some injury concerns, but still, even when healthy, 68, that is well below league average. His OPS was sitting under 600. His slugging was sitting under 350. He was getting on base only 25% of the time. An incredibly bad year. But what did Danny see that was happening? I don't know what happened in the minor league system for the Twins, but Lewin, his body, his durability. He just looked off. I have no idea. Okay. This is all speculation. Maybe something was going on with him. Maybe something was happening with health. Maybe something was happening just with his personal life. But it did not look like the Lewin Diaz that had been there all those years before. And that's why I wanted a buy low candidate. Well, the Marlins did that. But make no mistake, it was no longer a buy low candidate. Because in 2019, in high A, weighted runs created plus 154. OPS 866. He was slugging 533. He was getting on base 34% of the time. This was the Lewin Diaz Danny liked a year prior. He gets promoted to double A. Weighted runs created plus 159. OPS 928. Slugging 586. Getting on base again 34% of the time. Suddenly, Lewin Diaz was that prospect who was a top 10 prospect at the first base position across all the sites 2 years ago. And the Marlins identified that. They identified another position of need. They got shortstop with Jazz. They got outfield, which isn't necessarily a need, but you know what? Let's get greedy with Jesus Sanchez. They even got bullpen help and above average bullpen help with Ryan Stanek, which is, again, that Rays deal, chef kiss, because just beautiful. And then they fulfill a first base hole with Lewin Diaz. Just incredible. Just incredible. A franchise-altering deadline. And for those that say, oh, but look at the pitching they gave up. Okay, I'm just going to say one more thing. They got three top prospects, two which are in the top 100, and the third is a plus fielder, plus power, who was in the top 10. And likely after this year, will be again in the top 10 of his position. Without giving up Pablo Lopez, without giving up Caleb Smith or Sandy Alcantara, without giving up Sixto Sanchez or Edward Cabrera or Trevor Rogers or Braxton Garrett or Luis Palacios or whoever else you want to add to the list, a masterful job of getting value, developing value, and trading it and flipping it for more value. Risk? Absolutely. Anyone who's telling you otherwise is trying to fool themselves and fool you as they do it. Risk is there, but creative, aggressive, and if they hit on even two of these three deals, they're going to hit on that Rays deal, okay? If they hit on either of the other two deals, this is a positive franchise-altering deadline. Before I leave the farm system, I want to say one more thing. After these moves, surprise, top five farm system in baseball. Fangraphs has them ranked number 4. Ben Badler was just on the broadcast yesterday, I believe, Saturday evening. And he was talking about how this is one of the most advanced and one of the most improved farm systems in all of baseball. Ben Badler works for Baseball America. They have them number 10 prior to this deadline, prior to adding a top 100 prospect from their own list, another prospect who was just top 100, and Lewin Diaz, which they have ranked as the 10th prospect in the Marlins system. My guess is that they are at the lowest, 7th. Pipeline, MLB.com, has them with the 5th most prospect points. That's not an indicator of where they're going to rank them organizationally. However, typically those align very well. So I'm not saying it's a one-for-one indicator, but it is a factor. The Miami Marlins, 1.75 years into their rebuild, have an elite farm system. I got a lot of hate for saying that they would end this year with a top 10 farm system. That even happened before the deadline, because after the draft came out in the post-drafts, Baseball America already had them 10. Got a lot of heat for it. I've been validated. Now they have a top 5 farm system. Definitely have a lesser strength at the major league level in pitching, because when you take out Zach Gallen from that rotation, you do lessen the strength at the major league level, but they still have an elite pitching farm. The Marlins are going places. The question and our second dialogue piece today is, how quickly are they going to get there? We keep having this conversation. One, because people keep asking for it after anything that happens. So they got the draft. Okay, Danny, does this change the timetable. They got the international free agency. Does this change the timetable? And of course, you guessed it. All right, we traded for three great prospects, good to great prospects. Does this change the timetable? Well, you know me. I like to give you my opinion, but I also like to give you the opinion of others. So I did that poll again. I originally sent out the poll, I believe it was June, early June. I want to say June 5th or June 6th. I said, in your opinion, the Marlins are blank of pace. Ahead of expected pace, on expected pace, or behind expected pace. I said things to consider are the big league pieces. The 2018-2019 draft, which for what it's worth, 2018 draft, Connor Scott is having an amazing, amazing year, especially after his promotion. Go look up his numbers. Farm system talent production, and then the business side of the rebuild. At that time, remember, that was the one that got like 600 and something votes. 31% of individuals said they were ahead of expected pace. 55% of individuals said they were on expected pace, with 8% saying behind expectations. But, you know, they never actually tell me and explain to me why they chose that. So I'm not even sure if that's valid or if that's just someone that wants to, you know, change it up a little bit and be a little anti-Marlins. But even if we say that that was entirely valid, that means that 86% of individuals felt that the Marlins were either on expected pace or ahead of expected pace, with again 31% saying ahead of expectations. I decided to refresh the poll and send it out again. The answers were different. 58% said ahead of expectations. Remember, previously 31% had said that choice. 37% said as expected, which means that together, and I'm really bad at math, I believe that is 96%. 96%. It should be 95. 95% of individuals said they were either on expected pace or ahead of expected pace. 4%, which is why the numbers aren't adding up. That's just because Twitter is bad at fractions, said behind expected pace. That's impressive. That's impressive. That's what the fan base thinks. Do I think that? I think that I would still say on expected pace. I have always said that my belief is 2021. In 2021, we should see the fruits of the rebuild, at least getting you that, you know, that 500 win or getting close to a wild card spot. That's my expectation. I have no problem, and it's probably recency bias, right? They are changing their opinion on what happened. That's not a bad thing. It means that you're dynamic. It means that you don't stick to the one thing. At the end of the day, we now suddenly have a number four top farm system in baseball. Of course, you should possibly be dynamic in your thinking and change your expectations. I just don't think it does it for me, because I truly believe that what the Marlins have shown me this year is that they are going to be patient with these prospects. We're seeing it with Eason Diaz, even Lewis Brinson. Listen, Lewis Brinson Saturday night hit two homers. He, behind Eason Diaz, is leading the team in OPS. You know, he's doing well. He's even striking out less than 30%, which is significant when we're talking about Lewis Brinson. And yet they're still being patient with him. They're still being patient with Eason Diaz. They're being patient with a Sixto Sanchez or an Edward Cabrera, regardless of the promotions that they have gotten. Why would we expect them to be anything different with a Jesus Sanchez, regardless of how elite he is? With a J.J. Bleda, who had an RBI double today, with Lewin Diaz, with Jazz Chisholm, who they should be patient with. Absolutely be patient. He's, again, potential superstar, but very volatile. If the Miami Marlins continue to be patient, then I still think 2021 is that year. Because, see, unless you are going to convince me that the 2020 opening day lineup is going to have all of these guys, I'm not going to say that they're going to be over 500 and in a wild card spot next year, or at least in contention throughout the year. And that's what ahead of schedule would be. If instead of 2021, it's now 2020 that we're competing. And since I don't buy that, since I don't believe that they are going to all of a sudden change their style of development and not be as patient with these guys, I think that I'm still on the expected pace. Am I leaning towards ahead of schedule? Absolutely. Whoever's leaning towards behind schedule, I'm so sorry. I don't see your rationale at all. I would love to see an email from you telling me where it is. You know, on the Twitter poll, I said at the bottom, listen, I'm not here to tell you your opinion is wrong, but please tell me if you're voting behind schedule, what the rationale is and the logic there, because I want to know that perspective. If you are listening and you think they're behind, please email me, because I just don't see it. So, you know, either it's on pace and then you're leaning right on pace, or you're saying no, a little bit towards ahead of schedule. Whatever the case may be, it's good. It's good. It just is. You know, at this point, I can no longer complain that the national media isn't seeing it. FanGraphs is seeing it. Their writers are pointing out good things about the Marlins and the rebuild. Baseball America is going on their own broadcast network, on MLB Network, and talking about the positives of the rebuild. Even Pipeline, which I think is too reactionary, both in the positive and the negative. Even Pipeline, Jim Callis and the folks there, Jonathan Mayo, are saying, you know, that they underestimated this rebuild, that they didn't think they would be able to do it this quickly. And of course, everyone brings up Jeter. You know that I'm not one to do that. It's Sherman and Jeter and Gary Dembo and the amateur scout department and the drive. It's the group. It is the Marlins. It is not Lightning Post Jeter. In 1.75 years, 1 3/4 since they started this rebuild, have an elite farm system with pieces at the major league level, a good starting staff, and even better coming behind them. If you are a Marlins fan and you feel like you're closeted because, you know, everything has to be negative and everything has to be diminutive, and just tell people, and honestly, very respectfully, to just shut up and learn the game, because at this point, it's not even the national media who doesn't see it. They do. It's not scouting sites who don't see it, because they do. It's not those around the team, because we've been seeing it. At this point, it's people who just don't want to see it. Good on the Marlins for allowing themselves to stay to this plan. If they continue to do so, I think that they will be on schedule for a 2021 competitive, touching the playoffs, possibly their kind of year. And by 2022, you would imagine they would have two free agency markets that they would have been active in. I still think 2021 would be much more active than 2020. The Marlins themselves active. It's coming. Just remember those who have been with you along the ride, and remember those who have been trying to tell you. It hasn't been perfect. I sent out a laundry list of 15, 20 things I would have done differently on this rebuild. And of course, there's hindsight in that. And I'm going to talk about that in the next episode. It hasn't been perfect. But man, there's reason to be hopeful and to have some optimism when you're a Marlins fan. And I can't remember the last time I could say that. The pitching performances of the week and the hitter of the week. Monday the 29th, Caleb Smith went up against the Diamondbacks. He went 7 innings, 9 strikeouts to 1 walk. Just that ratio alone should tell you everything you need to know about why Caleb Smith is one of the candidates for pitching performance of the week. Whenever you could go 7 innings, 9 Ks, and 1 walk, it's almost irrelevant what else happened. You could have lost this game. The Marlins could have produced no offense for you. But once again, when you go 7 innings pitch with 9 Ks, 1 walk, oh, and by the way, only 4 hits, you deserve to be mentioned. Now, this game could have looked a lot differently if it wasn't for one pitch. See, Caleb also gave up 4 runs in this outing. 3 of them came on an awful pitch to Ketel Marte, who hit a 3-run homer. And then after that, Caleb was Caleb. Caleb dominated, getting strikeouts, looking, getting strikeouts, swinging, getting weak contact. Without that one pitch, he would have dominated that entire game. Now, we don't live in a world of without, but impressive nonetheless. Monday the 29th, first performance of the week. Thursday the 1st, now we're in August. Yamamoto goes up against the Twins. This is right after Zach Gallen has been traded away. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, I much rather would have traded Jordan Yamamoto or Sandy Alcantara. And quite frankly, I don't even necessarily disagree. But Jordan Yamamoto made sure to remind people of why he can also be someone that pushes that ceiling. His ceiling is very similar to Zach Gallen, at least from a scouting perspective. It's not the liveliest of stuff. They have a good arsenal. They're precise with their pitches, but the ceilings typically is a 3-4-5 guy for both of them. I would personally likely have Zach Gallen's ceiling a little higher, but Jordan Yamamoto decided to go 6 innings, pitch 8 strikeouts, 2, ready for it, 0 walks, 8-0. 6 inning pitch, 8 strikeouts, 0 walks. He also allowed 4 earned runs, but here's the catch where the starts are very different between Caleb and between Yams. Yams got touched up on 7 hits. Now, when you watch the game, there's a difference between you box score. He gave up maybe 2 hits that were solid contact hits. The rest of them seemed like they were little deke shots behind Cooper at first or behind whoever was at first that night. Little scribblers that go through the middle of the infield. We saw what we continue to see from Yams, which is weak contact, getting into damage, but then limiting it. It's just who he is. it's just who he is. What we saw that was a little different from before was that the weak contact was not coming from walks or from only being able to nibble around the corner. It was coming, and the damage rather was coming from that weak contact. Because when you go out and you strike out 8 opposing hitters and don't walk anyone, that's impressive. You decide who the pitching performance of the week was, but in a week where there weren't a lot of W's to talk about, there was exciting games, but there weren't a lot of W's to talk about. These two pitchers gave us something to take a breath on and relax and understand that pitching, although sudden, did not become a weakness. With hitter of the week, Brian Anderson, listen, I've said it 17 times, if not 700 times by now. He needs to be the person that gets extended. Give him a contract right now. Eat out his arbitration years, eat out a few of his free agents in years, and let him be the first cornerstone of this rebuild. Anderson has something like 7 hits this week. That's not a lot. That's not a lot. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. But 4 of them are homers. He's driven in 8 runners. He has 3-4 walks, including today's game. This is a middle-of-the-order bat who, by the time the Marlins are ready to compete, and here's where things get scary, the guy that's on pace to have like 25 home runs this year, Brian Anderson, might not even be your number 2, 3, 4 hitter. Might not even be your 5th hitter. With as deep as the bats now suddenly are, with a Blade and a Meisner and a Sanchez and an Isan Diaz and a Lewin Diaz and a Draz Chisholm and on and on and on, Brian Anderson might not even be a 2, 3, 4, 5 hitter for you. And yet he's on pace for 25 homers around that area. He continues to take his walks, and he continues to produce run production in a lineup where hardly anyone is ever on base. Because again, we're just being honest, nothing has changed with this anemic offense other than some pieces like a Brian Anderson or a Harold Ramirez or a Garrett Cooper are starting to produce. He needs to be extended. Harold Ramirez is also one of the options. He hit .291, got on base around 32% of the time this week, slugging .640. He has 2 homers, including one of the walk-off ones, which was great to see. I love Harold. 1 double, 1 triple, 1 walk, and he's driven in 6 this week. He continues putting himself into the conversation of being a core piece down the line, even if some, like myself, believe that he'll eventually be a 4th outfielder for this organization. It seems unfair, right? It seems unfair when I say that. It seems like I'm prospect hugging, right? Like I'm too focused on what could be instead of what's happening in front of me. I understand all of those caveats. I concede to all of that. It's just tough to imagine that with the types of ceilings that the prospects have, who are outfield-only prospects, as well as the understanding that Garrett Cooper would likely be moved into right field when Lewin Diaz is ready. Just who is Harold going to continuously beat out here? It's tough. And this is coming from someone that I am a big fan of Harold Ramirez, but who is he going to beat out for the three positions out there. I'm telling you right now, you call me a prospect hugger all you want. It's not Jesús Sánchez. Jesús Sánchez is playing at the major league level and is likely going to be well above average at the major league level. I don't think it's Monte Harrison either. Monte, if he stays healthy, has one of the highest ceilings. And with the improvements he made this year, one of the higher floors. All of a sudden, he's not as volatile as he was before in this system. Victor Mesa has even been doing well over the month and a half that he has, over the last month and a half. You have someone like JJ Bleday. You know, don't look too much into the numbers, whether good or negative this year for him. He is coming off of a long season in college, and this first year is more for him to work out certain kinks. Remember, I gave you the insight. I believe it was Craig Mish who gave us the initial insight that Gary Dembo, they do not tinker with a player's development until 6 months of seeing them play. So this is JJ Bleday, the college hitter, without even having everything that is given to a major league franchise to develop their players yet. He's someone that is going to be out there. And you still have guys like a Lewis Brinson. You still have guys like a Garrett Cooper who could move over. You still have individuals even like a Brian Anderson. Now, he is the answer at third. I roll my eyes every time that I see him not penciled in at third. I do not like it. But let's say that they go and get free agency at their base or whatever the case may be. Brian Anderson then goes out to right field. There's so many options in the outfield projections moving forward for the Marlins that it is tough to see Harold Ramirez really continue to hit his way into the playoff team that will eventually be the Miami Marlins. But man, I hope he keeps proving me wrong, because it's just crazy. And again, it's not even proving wrong. I love Harold Ramirez. I think he's going to be one of the best fourth outfielders in baseball by the time this team is ready to compete. I said it last time that I was on the mic. But it's tough to see him be in front of other individuals that have such high ceilings. The last candidate, Miguel Rojas, he had 348, 375, 652 this week with 9 hits, 2 home runs, 1 double, 1 triple, and he drove in 3. He continues doing exactly what we have started to expect from Miguel Rojas. He is a 2-win, if not better, player right now when we're looking at wins above replacement. He is going to be the starting shortstop next year. For those of you that might think it's Jazz Chisholm that will eventually start, absolutely. For those of you that think he will already start next year, I don't think so. Miguel Rojas is under contract for next year. After that, he's a free agent. I think that he is someone who the Marlins would be very wise to extend at the appropriate market value. Have him be your utility player. Have him be your leader. Have him be someone who can be there if a Jazz Chisholm or if a Jose Devers don't become the stars. And for what it's worth, Jazz Chisholm has a much higher star pedigree than Jose Devers, but still, I think that he's someone who should stay. I think he's someone that should be extended. He's a leader. He's the captain, and he continues to hit. Again, 348, 375, 652 this week. Brian Anderson, Harold Ramirez, and Miguel Rojas. In a week, again, where the offense was a little frustrating aside from their Saturday night game with the Rays. In a week where there was a lot of divisiveness and a lot of very quick, passionate reactions to the trade deadline. In a week where there is just volatility everywhere. We don't know when Isan Diaz is going to be called up. Starlin Castro's taking ground balls at third. That's probably get Isan up. There is a lot happening. It is nice to see that with all of the moving parts, the plan is still there. Brian Anderson is still hitting. There are still cogs in the pitching staff that should be here long-term that are producing. People in the national perspective are paying attention. The Marlins are coming. I feel like I've said that 2-3 times, and I'm sure that some are tired of hearing it, but they are. When we told you a year ago what was happening, 6 months ago what was happening, 3 months ago where we were called homers and we were called a million other things, that's okay. I like diversity of thought, but I'm not going to change my opinion, especially not while others are now starting to realize it. The Miami Marlins are coming. If you're a fan, don't worry about the ridicule. When you're talking to your friends and they laugh at you, don't worry about the jokes. When you consider what the standings say this year and likely next year as well, remember the perspective. The Astros were there. The Cubs were there. The Braves were there. The Marlins are here now, and they have rebuilt their farm system and have it at a higher spot than any of those organizations did 2 years into it. They are deep. They are talented. And, oh, they're coming. As always, everyone, I really do appreciate it. I told you I really was excited to talk today, so I was going to talk a lot. I hope you kept up with my Cuban pace. I appreciate you all listening. I will always ask you to like, and I will always ask you to leave reviews because I want to see them. Keep emailing me. If you're interested in joining the show and stopping by as a guest, let me know and we'll make it happen. We're getting towards the end of that list, so I want you to refresh that list for us. And as always, go fish.